Oh my God, he's going to leave the house and, you know, XYZ bad thing is going to happen.
You are listening to the Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello, I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. Welcome to episode 51 of the Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. My goal here is always to empower you to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. For the last three episodes, Christy Turner and I have been discussing the four elements that I teach strategies for in my signature course, Adapting Your Home for Dementia. Starting with episode 48, we've discussed the importance of safety, function, and stimulation in a dementia-friendly home. In this episode, we close out this series with a discussion on the fourth element, eliminating triggers which result in negative outcomes, aka unwanted behaviors. Now, if you've been incorporating the elements of safety, function, and stimulation into your home, then you are already well on your way to eliminating negative triggers. Christy, I've really enjoyed the last four or five episodes. We've been talking and sharing with our listeners on how to bring a lot of the elements of memory care into their home so they can avoid a move to memory care or delay the move to memory care. And, you know, we've talked about your memory care at home workshop. We've talked about my adapting your home for dementia course. And last week we talked about activities and stimulation in the home, which I thought was a really fun episode. Christy, today I want to talk about things in the home that I refer to as triggers. Triggers that result in negative outcomes or what people commonly refer to as behaviors. And you and I have talked about behaviors, I'm doing air quotes again, that this is really a form of, this is really a form of communication.
Right.
And the problem I've seen or learned about with behaviors is that when the term is pejorative. Is that the word? How you say it?
Pejorative.
The word is pejorative. And that makes it have a negative and unacceptable feel and meaning to it when it's really, as you say, just communication, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, so triggers basically result in actions that we would rather avoid, such as anger or aggression or exiting the home and becoming lost. So I'm looking forward to talking with you today and seeing if we can help our listeners identify things in the home that may be triggers and help them remove those so they can avoid those unwanted situations.
Sounds good.
So what would you say, knowing now what I've called a trigger, what would you say a number one trigger in the home is that results in a negative behavior, we'll call it?
I'm not going to say a number one because it's going to sound mean. So I will say there are multiple things that can be triggers. But one thing that is fairly easy for us to pay attention to and then start doing it differently is a lot of times we elicit a response that we would rather not get because we are feeling out of sorts, or we're feeling like we want things done perfectly, which we talked about this a little bit in the last episode. So sometimes we unintentionally elicit a response that we really don't enjoy.
I am not surprised that you're going to tell us to bring the good stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
Because
that is absolutely true.
That's what I understand why you wouldn't want to call it the number one. And I understand why, but I do understand why our care partners struggle with it a lot. But it is one of those areas for us, for care partners to work on. And that's to always bring the good stuff and to reset your expectations.
Yeah, and I say it, and I think our listeners know, but in case they don't, let me remind, I say it all out of love, because you guys have such a tough job. And, you know, when we bring the good stuff, and that's respect, kindness, love, empathy, and compassion, when we fill ourselves with that and turn it loose on ourselves, then we're in a position to share it with our person, and we just get such better results than if we're kind of in a task orientation mindset where we're thinking like, oh, come on, hurry up, let me get your shoes on, we got to get going. You know, it's a hurry up kind of a thing, and that bringing that energy perversely, conversely, ends up making everything go slower, right? So, yeah, if we can bring the good stuff, we're going to eliminate a lot of those triggers.
Yeah, and behavior is affected by our environment, and that's not just physical aspects of the environment, but the behavior of people around us. And you talk about that energy, and I think I've mentioned before how my wife and I kind of can go at a different, and I don't think we're unusual, but we can kind of go at a different pace, and she'll come through the house like a little tornado at times and on her way out the front door, and that energy, for some reason, I absorb it, and it took me a while to learn not to absorb it, but that energy, our energy is contagious.
Absolutely.
Rather than go into that, because I know we've talked a lot about bringing the good mm-hmm. stuff and those techniques, let's focus kind of on physical things through the house, that where I'm talking about things that maybe cause confusion, frustration, a feeling of overwhelm, and can lead to anger and depression.
I think I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm wondering if it's as obvious to our listeners. Something that happens a lot, I see this a lot when I go into homes and do assessments, is we have the TV on without really thinking about it. And families usually tell me like, oh, we just have it on for background noise. Mm-hmm. But man, that TV can cause so many problems. Number one, even if it's a scripted show, like let's say Law and Order, that can have some subject matter that can be very upsetting to people living with dementia. The other thing about a scripted show is people start having difficulty remembering what happened from one scene to the next, or, you know, then a commercial comes on. It can become confusing and frustrating. Then the other thing that TV is often left set to is something like cable news. This is not helpful. It's really not. And it doesn't matter if your person, shares the political views of the cable news station they're watching. It's upsetting, because if you actually take a step back, leave your own political stuff aside, take a step back and look at the message that's being conveyed, it's always about conflict, right? And this is really news of any sort. Maybe I shouldn't be picking on cable news, but bad news is what makes news, right?
Exactly.
we don't ever turn on the TV and say, today, a beautiful litter of puppies was born. Yeah, and
exactly.
You know, people do not tune into that. So the news can be very upsetting. People can have difficulty putting it into context, not understand what's going on. It can be very frightening. And so if you're a news junkie, good news, that's what your phone's for, right? So you can download an app on your phone and surreptitiously check your phone, or you can run into the bedroom and get an update on a TV in there. But that's just something that can cause a lot of confusion and elicit a response that we're not looking for with our person.
And a TV is extra stimulus, right? And that can be confusing. And as our brain, as the brain changes, it struggles more to process all the different inputs. so that I can't work on anything in my house if the TV's on. I have to start off with some silence and some white noise. So I can only imagine what that TV might be doing to somebody who's living with dementia.
Yeah, and you know, that is such a great way to put it. I hadn't really thought of that, but like, I work at, my office is in my home too, and it is, there's nothing going on. There is no background noise unless, you know, a lawnmower is going in the neighborhood, or my dog twitches because another dog's walking by. But and that's because I do a lot of writing. And think about, for a person living with dementia, man, it's tough. You don't want them to have to use their energy on trying to figure out what's coming out of the TV, right?
Exactly. And it could be a radio, it could be loud people in the other room, it can be any kind of stimuli that creates and leads to that confusion.
Yeah, sometimes we all just need a little peace and quiet, you know. Music is generally very good for people living with dementia, and they typically enjoy it. But sometimes, you know, we just all need a little break, a little peace and quiet, a little siesta without background noise.
Not only is it the sound of things that can be hard to process, but people with dementia have vision issues as well, correct?
Yes. So poor lighting is not going to be helpful at all. It will definitely cause some problems because people can misperceive, for example, a bookcase. In low lighting, they can take it as a, you know, stranger danger. There's an intruder in the home. So that can definitely cause problems.
And lighting's one of the...
Lighting, right? Lighting in and of itself, that's a meaty topic.
It's a very meaty because, you know, you talk about the light being too dim, but then at the same time, when the light's too bright, it can cause shadows and create illusions, and that people, I've read, see, you know, scary figures, and that gets scary because you can't process it. And we talked about how in one of our last episodes on function, how important lighting is because it helps us to be able to read, and that helps us to stay intellectually stimulated. But it also helps keep us safe because it lights mm-hmm. our walkway the lack of it or too much of it can also trigger an unwanted response.
Yes. And this is, you know, people talk about so-called sundowning, right? And that has a direct correlation with light or lack thereof too. So sometimes it's going to take a little bit of experimentation to find out what the Goldilocks formula is in your house as far as lighting goes. And it's definitely worth experimenting with, because once you've got that dialed down, you know, then nothing but good stuff's going to happen. You're going to eliminate one trigger, right?
Right. So I'm sure some listeners out there probably are like, oh, I'd like to learn more about sundowning. But so don't fret, because Christy is been gracious enough to write a couple articles for the Together in This audience, and I'll put links to her sundowning articles on the show notes that you'll find at togetherinthis.com/episode-51. Wow.
Wow. We went through episode 50 and just didn't even realize it, huh? Yeah. No celebration, no nothing?
No nothing. I have to figure out how to do that. Since
we're going to have to do something for episode 100, right?
Coming up quick. So
yeah. But speaking of articles, Mike, what I was actually thinking about is an article on Together in This that has to do with lighting. And I can't remember the title of it, but it goes into lighting.
Yeah, I have a couple of things, and I'll make sure I look that up too and provide that link as well. So it's probably part of my Adapting Your Home course. But so,
oh, okay.
Yeah. So other things in the home that can cause confusion or frustration, we touched on this a lot in our episode on function, I think, and that's the layout of the house. So sometimes our loved one moves in with us and it's a whole new home, or sometimes we go in their house and think we're doing great things and we move things around, but the layout of the home can cause issues as well. Whereas maybe they're like, where's my bedroom, or having trouble finding the bathroom, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that happens a lot. So we want to, you know, again, coming right back to lighting, but we want to make sure if people are in a new or unfamiliar environment that there's lighting, you know, like a nightlight, so that they can easily find the bathroom at night and kind of navigate their way. And, you know, and because I've seen this situation so many times, you know, daughter and son-in-law have lived in their home for the last 30 years. They move mom into the home with them, and she gets confused about where the bathroom is. And they, well, for goodness sakes, mom, you know, you've been coming over here for 30 years. Here's the thing. Let's remember this, because that making that statement can elicit a response that we do not enjoy, right?
Exactly.
So let's remember that our person has dementia, which means sometimes they get confused. And they don't remember things that we think they should remember. And us calling them out on it just generates bad feelings. It makes them feel stupid and embarrassed. And if there are other people around, they can feel humiliated too. So just as a practical matter, it's not helpful. It's not a tool that works. So that's something that we can just eliminate if we are doing it, is just, you know, when somebody says, where's the bathroom? The correct answer is, here, let me show you.
Right.
Or whatever it is that they're looking for. That's always the right answer. Here, let me help you find it. Here, let me show you.
And this is an instance where I personally would try some signage, because it's an inexpensive attempt to see if I could put up a sign that says bathroom and points in that direction, or
sure,
helps guide them. And if that's successful, then we've eliminated that frustration of not finding the bathroom, and we've eliminated the potential for the care partner or myself to say something that we're not happy about saying.
Right.
So trying these things can lead to success in multiple areas. And I think under function, when we talked about function, we talked about how some people have labeled their cabinets with pictures of glasses or socks, or mm-hmm. just to help their loved one find things easier and make that home more functional for them. And that leads to reduced triggers.
It does. And it's just one of the easiest things that we can possibly do is, and you know, sometimes people will like get pictures out of magazines or whatever, or go like, are there flashcards that have pictures of these things? A better idea is just use your phone, take a picture of your own glasses, your own plates, whatever, and then boom, print out that picture and put that on your cabinet, so that your person knows, like, oh, okay, and it looks familiar to them. I will say that I have worked with families that have told me, yeah, I guess that could be a great idea, but I really don't want that kind of stuff in my house. I don't want my house to look like whatever it is they think that's going to make their house look like.
Right.
They, you know, and so that's definitely one way to look at it. But I would also say that if you really don't want to make any minor modifications to your home, such as labeling things or putting pictures or signage on things, that maybe it would be good to take a look at, is this the right situation? Right? Because maybe you have moved your person in with you out of a sense of obligation, or you feel like you know, you were supposed to, or nobody else in the family would step up, but you weren't born with that caregiver. You know, some people it comes very easily to, and other people not so much. So it's always okay to take a look at, like, are we the best person to do something, or would it be more effective if we hired someone, or if our loved one lived in a different setting? That's always okay too.
Christy, I want to also share that while we're trying to eliminate and reduce possible triggers, we also have the potential to be creating them with what we're doing. And I'm going to give an example here of where a family... Well, with my bathroom sign, for instance, if I put that bathroom sign in front of where Dad sits down to relax every day and he keeps reading the word bathroom, that might be prompting him to want to get up and go to the bathroom when he really doesn't need to. And I read a article about how a family was using one of the portable commodes to help protect their loved one's dignity and help them get to a bathroom location quicker, but they put it within her eyesight, or her line of sight, excuse me. And so she kept getting up and going to use it when she didn't need to. So they had created this false need. And their simple solution was to move it out of her line of sight behind the couch so that she only saw it when she was getting up because she needed to go to the bathroom. But in that way, they had created a trigger by trying to be helpful, but because they kept adapting, they found the right solution, or would you call it the Goldilocks sum?
Right.
I think so.
Right. Yeah. So we don't know right out of the gate that a certain solution is going to work perfectly, and maybe it will and maybe it won't. And it's okay to keep experimenting. It's funny to me because a lot of times, we realize there's a problem with X, Y, or Z. And so we go seeking a solution and the solution doesn't work perfectly straight out of the gate. And we're like, oh, okay, well, this whole thing is stupid. No, we just need to experiment a little. Then we can get to that Goldilocks point. So please don't be discouraged if the first time you try something new, it doesn't work or it doesn't work the way you expected. Sometimes it takes a little bit of practice on our part, practicing the technique to see the results that we want to see. And it's still worth trying. And as far as visual cues go, I always say, those can be your best friend or those can totally bite you in the butt. It's like when, you're trying to get the keys away from your person, or you have gotten the keys away and, telling them that driving's just not going to be a part of their future, and you keep their car parked on the street in front of the picture window that their chair looks out to,
right.
Of course they're going to keep bringing up driving. And so it's just little things that a lot of times we don't think about until we're in those situations where, oh, this isn't going very well.
As you're talking about seeing things that elicit actions or feelings, it makes me think of pictures in the house. And we often hear how the person with dementia thinks of themselves as a much younger person. So even they don't even recognize themselves in many of the pictures that we may have around the house. Is that true?
Yeah, it depends. Some people do, and it depends on what type of dementia too. So people with vascular dementia are usually going to recognize themselves from years ago or from last week, last month, 10 years ago.
Okay.
Without any problem. Alzheimer's may be different. And if they see a picture of, let's say somebody's 80 years old and has Alzheimer's disease, and there's a real nice family photo that was taken 10 years ago when they were 70, they may get to a point where they're like, oh, that's nice. My parents are in that picture.
Okay.
Because there might be a family resemblance there, right? So they'll be thinking it's their parents. So, okay. But yeah, typically people are going to recognize themselves from like college age through like their 40s is when they're really going to see those pictures and be like, yeah, that's me, and have familiarity there.
So would it make sense in some instances to maybe remove the newer pictures and replace them with pictures from those time eras?
Yeah, I mean, if there's limited space and you need to get into that and, in replacing pictures, or if the pictures that are currently on display are causing any type of distress, then sure, that would be a good thing to do. But I think people, we all like to see a reminder, and this is what pictures are, right? They're a reminder of a happy moment. A momentous occasion, something important in our lives. So to the extent that we're showcasing that, I think we're always going to have success.
I see. And the other place I've heard pictures, or maybe I should call it artwork, I've heard artwork can cause problems when it's too busy or there's crazy patterns in that artwork. Have you seen that firsthand?
What I've seen firsthand actually was with my grandfather, and it was a perfectly lovely painting. It's of a girl on a French girl on a beach. It hung in my grandparents' living room for years and years and years. and like seriously probably from the 70s. And then my parents had it in their home after my grandma passed. And my grandpa came over one day. This was, my mom had brought him home. He was in assisted living by this point. And he was back on the beach at Iwo Jima.
Wow.
And having a meltdown.
No.
Yeah, because he had the Marine next to him. He had witnessed his the top of his head being blown off.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So, you know, and that picture, again, that was a familiar picture that had been in the house for years and years and years. And that particular day, nope. So my answer is, you know, I guess it depends.
Right.
Sometimes you just don't know what's going to happen until it happens.
Because I've often wondered about, like me, or some of us who say we're like nature, we like to get out and hike, we've been to the national parks. Wondering if it would make sense to remove the abstract art and put up artwork that's like a picture of Half Dome in Yosemite Valley, or you know, things like that that could make us have that spiritual feeling, if you will, of the outdoors, but also bring back memories and be a conversation starter.
Yeah, and for me, and of course, you know, you can definitely do that with art on the walls, or you can make a photo album too. That's another option. But I always just, you know, whatever it is that makes your person happy, if you know of something that will make your person happy, do it. I mean, I just always look at it that way, because I think that's what we all want as care partners, is for our person to be as happy as they can possibly be. And if there's something we know that makes them happy, then that kind of becomes a no-brainer, right?
Right.
We're going to do that thing.
Right. You kind of touched on exit seeking, or the, you know, the person seeing their car outside, making them want to drive. And one of the things that I think care partners try to control or struggle with is when their loved one's trying to leave the home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's such a natural thing for us to do, to, you know, maybe it's just getting fresh air, or it's you're wanting to go somewhere and do something. And that is one of the ones that I kind of struggle with, on how to encourage or share with our care partners on how to prevent that situation. Do you have any thoughts on exit seeking and how to eliminate anything that might be triggering that, other than having the car parked right outside the big picture window?
Right. So that's one thing. Then the other thing is, and this is just so helpful, like in dementia care, we want to use the same construct that's used in improv comedy, which is yes and, right? And the reason is, think about it for yourself. Do you like to be told no? None of us like to be told no. That does not change when somebody gets dementia. So instead of no, you can't go out that door, what we're going for is, you know, they're saying, well, okay, I'm going to take off. Oh, okay. And that's the yes, right? And where are we going? Because
okay.
I've now invited myself along, right?
Right.
Oh, no, I'm going by myself. Oh, no, I could not bear to be away from you. I love you too much. I mean,
okay,
I'm just going to keep it going, right? And obviously, I've had a lot of practice at this. But if your goal is twofold, one is you're going to keep your person safe, and the other is you love this person, then that's pretty easy, right? You come in with that mindset of, okay, what's it going to take? Because maybe your person does just need to get out of the house. And one thing where I see this happen a lot is it's really bad weather. So it could be, you know, buckets of snow, buckets of rain, blazing hot, whatever it is. There's something called natural consequence. So when we let the person open the door and they walk outside into the rain and see it's raining, or that it's really cold, or that it's blazing hot, they go, maybe I'll go later and come back inside. That's a very common reaction to seeing for themselves what the situation is. Again, somebody wants to go, you know, I need to get to the store. Oh, well, what should we get at the store? Now I've invited myself along. Okay. Person's saying they want to go to the store. So, but now I'm focusing on, we better make a list. We don't want to forget anything. What all should we get at the store? Oh, cantaloupe. Yeah, I think that's in season. Man, those cantaloupe they grow in Mendota, aren't those good? Oh, I love cantaloupe right out of California, Central Valley. Oh, I mean, you can go a lot of different places, right? And maybe you do go to the store. Maybe you do need something. I don't know. But just stay in that moment, because where we start feeling anxiety is we're shooting past the moment to, oh my God, he's going to leave the house and, you know, XYZ bad thing is going to happen, right?
Okay.
We start getting anxious, then we're projecting anxiety, and our person, of course, is picking it up.
I see.
And so the situation gets worse. But if we're just like, oh, okay, let's start there, like, sure, that's reasonable. Now what are we going to do? And just hang in there moment by moment.
That's really great advice. And I think if our care partners can incorporate some of the strategies that we discussed in episode 50 under keeping your loved one active, I think that you can also have them, you know, they're not becoming bored and they're not looking for purpose that may cause them to want to jump in the car and go somewhere. So that by doing that, I think that can also, you can help avoid that trigger. Well, Christy, believe it or not, once again, we're up at the end of the episode. So you have any final thoughts or suggestions on this topic of eliminating triggers in the home?
Yeah, I would just say to care partners, first of all, it can be done. Second of all, you know, it's okay if stuff happens. You will get a lot of opportunity to practice. Don't beat yourself up. We know you're doing the best you can in every moment. So just, you know, try again. You'll get there.
All right, Christy. Well, thanks again for being on the Alzheimer's podcast.
My pleasure.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
This concludes our conversation with Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, right here on the Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. Adapting your home for dementia and making it dementia-friendly is a lot of work, but by taking incremental steps each day, you can keep your loved one home longer, safer, and happier. Be sure to check out the episode page at togetherinthis.com/episode 51, where you will find links to resources and a link to the Adapting Your Home for Dementia course that will help you be successful. Thank you, and I look forward to sharing more with you next week when Christy and I start a 3-episode series on end of life, creating a good death, things no one tells you about end of life, and the end of life specialist. Bye now. You've been listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.